KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
I'm from Cleveland Heights.
West Oakland, California.
I think my landlord marketed it to me as Temescal, but it's actually Golden Gate.
Coming up, 6 months after a huge fire in West Oakland, many residents are still without permanent housing.
Some people are actually in tents in one of the many burgeoning encampments in West Oakland.
Then musician Maya Songbird talks about how she made space for herself and found her audience as an electronic musician.
What feels good is when you find your tribe who wants to ride on the rainbows with you, so it's worthwhile.
And this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound Revealed. That's coming up next today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. In the past year, Oakland has seen a string of high-profile fires. 36 people died at the Ghost Ship Fire in Fruitvale in December. There were arsons at construction sites, one east of Lake Merritt and another on the Emeryville border. And there was the huge construction fire in July downtown. Plus, there have been a string of fires at homeless encampments across the city. Then there was the fire at an apartment building in West Oakland on the morning of March 27th. Four people died and nearly 100 lost their homes. For many of the residents, this was one of the few places they could live, and 6 months on, they've had trouble finding stability. KALW's economics reporter Jeremy Dalmas wanted to find out what happened.
Richard Double R. Myers wasn't home at 2551 San Pablo when it burned down.
I was with my girlfriend, who's pregnant. She's 5 months pregnant now.
They were at a hotel in Fairfield that night, halfway between Oakland and where she lives in Sacramento.
I was channel surfing and hit a local news, and something caught my eye on the local news about a fire in Oakland, and I started nudging my girl. I said, babe, that's my place.
When Myers arrived back in Oakland, he was homeless. 6 months on, he's still bouncing between hotel rooms and his grandmother's home. Myers had helped out around 2551 San Pablo and interacted with most of the residents, including Ed Warren Anderson, a deacon who was one of the four casualties.
Whenever you see him, he's always willing to help, always had a smile. That's gone. You know, that man's underground now, you know what I'm saying, because of somebody's neglect, you know, and they need to pay for that.
The San Pablo Fire, as it's often called, was just one in a string of recent fires that made the news. In Oakland, in San Francisco's Mission District, and at homeless encampments in both cities. Stats don't show that there have been more fires in either city in recent years, but Oakland city officials do say that the housing crisis makes it harder to keep buildings safe. Renters are afraid of bringing up code issues because they can't afford to move. Jonas Strauss, the executive director of the Oakland Warehouse Coalition, sees a connection between all of these fires. Poor people are being pushed into unsafe conditions.
When you look at the folks at the Ghost Ship, I mean, these were universally low-income folks. This is like, look, I mean, this is poor people being killed.
Strauss did a lot of organizing after the Ghost Ship fire, and after a fire burned down his own home in 2015.
People get pushed out of their traditional living situations. They don't have anywhere to go. They end up in buildings such as this.
I'm in front of 2551 San Pablo right now. And even though the fire was 6 months ago, it looks like it burned down last week. You can still see someone's blanket hanging out the window. The fire started in a unit whose power had been shut off, which was common in this building. The person living in that apartment was using a candle on a styrofoam plate for light, and that was what ignited the fire. Even though this building had had numerous city inspections, including three in the months before the fire, it was a wreck.
It had full-grown rats and roaches by the time of that fire. Bed bugs. It was an accident waiting to happen.
Ceilings were caving in, and there was mold. Inspectors had noted this address as a known fire hazard. Just 3 days before the fire, they had walked through here with the owner and told him to immediately fix the sprinkler system and the fire system and to clear the hallways. regardless of these inspections, this building still burned down. For resident Richard Myers, while it wasn't healthy, this is one of the few places he could stay. After working full-time with a multi-hour commute, he could still barely afford his $300 in rent.
They basically didn't require a down deposit to house you. And you're talking about there were times when I couldn't pay the full $300.
Like the ghost ship, since this fire, residents have scattered. Some are in jail, one has since died. It's really hard to know for certain, but Strauss guesses about a third have found their own housing locally, another third have had to move in with their family or leave the state, and a final third are like Richard Myers, here but still without a home, even living on the street.
Some people are actually in tents in one of the many burgeoning encampments in West Oakland, such as Northgate, such as Sycamore, such as Wood Street. You know, there's one person on my list who I know, if I need to get in touch with her, I have to go to this encampment at this particular place to go find her.
But there's at least one huge difference between the Ghost Ship Fire and the San Pablo Fire. Fundraising. The people who lived in Myers' building had especially few resources. While the people who lived at Ghost Ship were not necessarily well off, they did get support, both from their social networks and a sympathetic public. After Ghost Ship, where 36 people died and around 20 were displaced, over $20 million worth of donations poured in. After the San Pablo fire, which saw 4 people die and over 100 people lose their homes, a series of fundraisers brought in a little over $100,000. That's 20 times less. It can be hard to monetize or compare tragedies in this way, but Strauss, who personally started fundraisers for both fires right after each happened, sees an imbalance.
I think of the two significant disastrous events as really on the same level. The lack of fundraisers and the lack of support for these folks in the long run is heavily indicative of endemic racism, and there's no other way around it.
Fire victim Richard Double R. Myers agrees.
It has a lot to do with race, that the majority of the people that lived in that building were Black. Specifically, African-American families.
He points to a fundraiser he started for himself as an example.
I set up a GoFundMe page and only raised $90.
Other residents only raised $20 or $65 online. But individual victims of the Ghost Ship Fire were able to raise $20,000 or $30,000 apiece. Victims of the San Pablo Fire did get around $9,000 each directly from the city of Oakland. Money that the landlord, Keith Kim, is required to reimburse, but hasn't yet. Landlords are legally responsible for paying relocation funds when their property becomes uninhabitable. But Strauss says a lot of residents burnt through that money paying for hotel rooms because they had nowhere else to go. Six months after his home was destroyed, Myers blames the city for the fire.
The city came through a few times. And if they came through a few times and that place wasn't right, then they should have done something about it. They should have enforced their codes.
He also blames his former landlord.
You mean to tell me you had a multiple unit building that didn't have smoke detectors in it? Didn't have fire extinguishers ready to use to try to put out a fire that probably could have been put out? And lives were lost? Oh yeah.
Myers is currently suing the landlord, as well as the three low-income housing providers that were middlemen between the landlord and many of the residents. His lawsuit is one of a half dozen from many different residents of the building. But he's still without stable housing. There's just nowhere that's affordable for him and his partner to move in together.
Now that I have a baby on the way, again, that pressure is there to try to get something to go right.
Remember how he could barely pay $300 a month to live at 2551 San Pablo? If you haven't looked recently, a one-bedroom in Oakland currently goes for around $2,000. Their first child is due in a couple months. For Cross Currents, I'm Jeremy Dalmas.
Jeremy is KALW's economics reporter. You can get in touch with him at economics@KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Maya Songbird is an eclectic electric lo-fi musician born and raised in the Castro in San Francisco. She took the leap into making music full-time in 2009 with her song Lust. Her songs range from electropop to disco funk. She mixes dance beats and synthesizer loops over themes of self-love, sex positivity, and sometimes with a dash of occult. On this Bay Area Beats, Maya came to KALW Studios to play a couple of her songs and to talk about how she made space for herself in the music scene as a Black woman who doesn't sing R&B.
Something about the feeling that you get when you're around me, I lose the fire, it burns all over the place.
The Wicked Attraction song is pretty dark-sided. I was inspired by a dark-sided love affair. I say I want to set you on fire in such a metaphorical type of way. I want to set you on fire from the inside to where you're so, you know, magically attracted to me that you're like, wow, this is so wicked. It's a wicked love affair, Maya.
I
want
to set you up with candles all around you. I want to set you on fire. If I ever wanted a fantasy, I want it with you.
I felt like there's a dark side to me because of being on the cusp of Scorpio. I have this dark-sided, you know, like, I wear black a lot. Like, I pretty much, my whole life, even as a kid, wore black, you know. I look at the pictures of me growing up and I'm like, oh wow, there I am again in a black outfit. You know, that's just been my thing. Like, I remember my family actually told me I couldn't wear black clothes anymore. I couldn't wear black lipstick. They kind of took black away from me, like I was wearing black nail polish. That was just me. I've always been goth. I used to shave my eyebrows off, everything. That's just me. I started singing in the church, like pretty much a lot of singers do. And they gave me a solo, and then I played Miriam in the church musical and had a tambourine. And I was just like, you know, I had this gift, and I would like go around singing. And like, my dad bought me a speaker and my first mic in PA. And then I would sing to all my friends. It was like really bad. My mom took it away from me, actually, and I never saw it again because, like, I guess I was doing things like waking her up with the PA, like singing good morning to her and just like being really annoying. Gosh, I heard so many no's in my career. Like, I was told when I was a teenager, because I had a little weight on me, that I didn't look like Aaliyah, Brandy, or Monica, so I could never be in the music industry. You know, that's what they told me. So they told me because I didn't fit a certain standard that I couldn't have this dream. So I had to kind of create my own world, my own lane. I had to kind of create my own ideal of what music, the music industry is, and maybe even change the standard of what music industry is, you know? For the music industry, you gotta look a certain way. You gotta be skinny, you gotta be lighter, white complected. If you wanna sing a certain type of music, you have to be a certain type of color. Like, you know, stepping away from the fact that I am an artist that is not labeled R&B. As a black woman, the first thing they do is label you an R&B artist. No matter what, you can be out here raging and yelling and being punk all the way, but they'll be like, she's an R&B artist. And you're like, what?
I'm no good for you. I'm no good for you. You know that I'm no good.
So it feels good for like publications to say she's a lo-fi disco pop artist. You know what I mean? Getting compared to La Tigre and like, you know, you go to a show, people talk in the audience if you're a new artist or whatever. This is a while ago, but like all of a sudden people stopped talking and they started listening, and then the rest is history. Now I have a fan base and people are coming to actually see me perform, and that feels good. You know, and it took me years to get that. I would say that took me about 30 years. And I'm 34. It took me 30 years. I've been wanting that ever since I was 4. What feels good is when you find your tribe who wants to ride on the rainbows with you, so it's worthwhile. I want for people to be happy when they hear my music, because everything is so like downtrodden and just depressing, you know, like, so there's, my music is an outlet, an escape, like here comes a rainbow. Like when my music comes on in people's iTunes, I want for them to like feel like they went to my happy galaxy and they were able to express and kind of soak up some of my soul, you know, like sunshine. So that's what I want for people. I'm always preaching self-love, like, you know, and all my music, just like to enjoy yourself, be happy being yourself, and continue to love and grow, because that's the only way to survive on this planet, no matter what is happening in our world today.
That was electronic musician Maya Songbird for Bay Area Beats. She's releasing a new single in October called Darker. You can see her playing at Afternoon Delight Queer Disco Party at the New Parish in Oakland. That's October 1st. And all these details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
See how the little chick has a little rhino horn nubbin at the base of its bill? The adults grow like a full little horn that they have during the breeding season.
So, did you know what that was and where we recorded it? We sent KALW's Claire Stremple to find out more.
We are about to ride in a 14-foot Zodiac, well, it's actually an Achilles, inflatable boat over to Año Nuevo Island.
Jesse Beck is our captain on today's inflatable boat commute.
I'm a biologist with Oikonos Ecosystem Knowledge, which is a nonprofit in Santa Cruz, California.
Right now, we're loading the boat with supplies like food, fuel, and sleeping bags. That's because Jesse and three other biologists are spending the next 2 days studying the seabirds on Año Nuevo Island, which is otherwise closed to the public. I'm only allowed to come along and record if I help them.
I'll get in our places, and let's pull it out.
Jesse's special project is conserving the rhinoceros auklet, a relative of the puffin. These birds dig burrows for their nests with their feet and a little horn on their bill, which is how they get their name. Año Nuevo Island is one of their few nesting places in the United States, so we're all zipped tightly into wetsuits and crashing through waves in this tiny boat. This conservation project is funded by money the government puts aside to fix ecological disasters caused by oil spills. In this case, the Luckenbach oil spill. The Luckenbach is a ship that smashed into another vessel off the coast of San Francisco and sank in 1953. It had nearly 500,000 gallons of fuel in the hull, and when the sunken hull rusted out in the 90s, it started belching oil into the water. That killed a bunch of marine life, including almost 600 rhinoceros auklets, double the current population of Año Nuevo Island.
The beach is called the Landing Cove, and it's where we land all of our boats.
High swells nearly flood the small boat's motor, so it's a relief when we arrive at the island.
There's going to be a lot of nesting gulls. Right now, all their eggs are hatching into chicks, and so they're going to defend those chicks to the maximum by pecking us on the head, hitting us on the head, and pooping all over our jackets.
That explains the raincoat they give me. We climb up some rocks and a ladder to get onto the island. It's small, just a little bigger than Alcatraz. Unrelenting wind and the cacophony of bird cries hits us in full force. The rocky landscape is studded with nests. We could be on another planet.
Take a handful of these. We're gonna make a little path.
That's Ryan Carl. He manages the restoration project with Jesse. We're deep in bird territory, so he's building a path winding through fragile nests and scouting for vulnerable chicks.
The gulls really don't like it when you get near their chicks. That hurt.
Ow! Damn it!
Jerk bird.
Western gulls nest on the ground above rhinoceros auklet burrows. They're literally on top of each other, and they don't get along. Gulls sometimes eat auklets.
This one right here is the mean one.
Dive bombing us. Hurts.
The paths we make will keep birds safe tonight when researchers are walking around the island in the dark. We'll be mist netting, catching birds in big, gauzy nets, kind of like tennis nets, but harder to see.
The mist nets are going to go like right here is going to be one, and then there's going to be two going this way.
We're specifically looking at the rhinoceros auklets and what they eat.
So the auklets are going to be coming in at night with fish in their bills to feed their chicks. And we want to catch them as they're coming in, and then we're going to get those fish as a diet sample.
Rhinoceros auklets are some of the only birds that bring back whole fish, which is the gold standard of a seabird diet sample. This way, scientists can tell exactly which species the birds are catching.
Are we all ready?
Yes.
I think so.
I need someone to help me open the net.
The nets bloom outwards on the wind and flutter. They're almost invisible in the twilight. It's no wonder the birds fly into them. I can barely see them, and I know where to look.
So Claire, I'm gonna need you at the banding station, like basically as soon as the first bird hits.
It's almost 10 o'clock and pretty dark, but we see the first bird hit the net. He thrashes. Tenderly, a researcher pulls him out and brings him up to where Ryan and I are recording data.
Not a bird. No fish. Thorough check.
Let's stick its head in there. What, net? Net three?
Net three, yes.
Thanks.
When we get a bird, we check to see if it has a band, then log the time we caught it and whether or not it carried fish. The next bird doesn't have a band, so Ryan gently wraps one around his leg.
It's a stainless steel band, and I'm just closing it down with pliers. It's super simple. They just each have their own number, and put it on their right foot always.
California is different from most other states in how it takes stock of ecological disasters, like the Leukenbach spill. In this case, California is replacing not only the auklet mortalities, but total auklet years lost. What that means is when one bird dies, the ecosystem also loses the potential of the chicks that bird might have raised if it lived longer. There's a lot of complicated math to project what the colony would have looked like if the disaster never happened. When the oil started spilling in the 90s, only 19 chicks were surviving per year. Now the colony is so healthy that last season's count was 96 new chicks, more than the researchers even hoped.
I'll show you how to release it.
Okay, let's do it.
I cradle the auklet against my stomach, a small warmth against my larger one. The bluff is a maze of nests that drops off suddenly to the ocean below. Thick, angry shadows of gulls swirl above, diving down to peck at my head. I crouch to release the small bird. He staggers towards the edge in the red light of my lamp, raises his wings, and seems to vanish into the shrieking black sky. On Año Nuevo Island, I'm Claire Strumpel for Cross Currents.
Do you know an amazing place that would make a great audiograph? Tell us about it. Send us an email at news@klw.org. We love hearing from you. That's our show for today. The Cross Currents team includes Marisol, Medina Cadena, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Stephen Short, Jackie Sajiko, Andrew Seltzer, Beau Walsh, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
The autumn leaves drift by my window.
Today's local music is by Denise Perrier. She has a show at Piedmont Piano Company in Oakland on Sunday, and she's calling it an autumn serenade. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
I see your face, the warm, wonderful caresses, the sunburned hands that I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grew long, and soon I'll hear old winter song. Oh, but I miss you most of all, my darling. When the autumn leaves start to fall.